Glad you're with us, and we hope that you will enjoy the next 90 minutes of our program. In ACA, we meet to share the experience we had as children growing up in an alcoholic or dysfunctional home. That experience infected us then, and it affects us today. By practicing the 12 steps, by focusing on the solution, and by accepting a higher power of our understanding, we find freedom from the effects of alcoholism or other family dysfunction. We identify with the problem and learn to live in the solution one day at a time. This session is titled Healthy Meetings. It's a partnership between the Connecticut Intergroup and the World Service Organization, which we call WSO, of Adult Children of Alcoholics. Our panelists today are Aaron, Josh, and Karen. And they will discuss how to check if your meeting is healthy and how to resolve problems and conflicts that may arise. So here's a quick overview of the next 90 minutes. During the session, we're going to, as I mentioned, hear from three seasoned panelists, and they are going to be presenting some PowerPoint slides and some skits for you. We're going to welcome you during their presentations to put your questions in chat. There'll be an opportunity after their presentations to get some of those questions answered. And so we're going to do the very best we can to get your questions answered from chat, understanding that, as you probably know, chat does scroll down. So we're going to try really hard not to miss anybody. And then following the presentations all together, we will open it up for questions and answers. And in that session, you can go to participants at the end, at the bottom of your screen. That will pull up all the participants on this program. And then you can just click raise hand. And that way we can call on you in order, hopefully bring some order out of chaos. I'll keep the meeting open till about 4 p.m., even though it's scheduled to end at 3:30. So if you have any questions that haven't been answered, hopefully we can do that. And finally, if you have a question that is not answered, you can certainly submit it to our website, which is info@ct-aca.org. We'll put that email address in chat so you can copy it down. A big thank you to our co-hosts, certainly Liz C., who is has been the powerhouse behind and the vision behind all these panels. So we really want to thank her. Our technical hosts are Brad, and I think Christopher is with us today. A few technical notes. We will be recording the speakers and the questions and answers. Written permission has been granted. They will only be available through audio, so no one's face will be shown. And they will be posted on our CT Intergroup website and also on the WSO website. They will be available there. Let's see. Yeah, chat between participants is going to be disabled during the speaker portion, but as I've mentioned, you can put your questions in chat, and certainly if you have technical problems, put that in chat as well. And we also ask you to remember that the seventh tradition asks us that we are self-supporting through our own contributions. You can make contributions either to our Connecticut Intergroup Treasurer, and that address we will also put up in chat, or on our intergroup website that I just mentioned, ct-aca.org. There is a button called donations for member donations, and you can contribute that way as well, which we would appreciate. So quick introduction for our speakers. Karen S. Came into ACA in the DC area 12 years ago. She was involved in establishing the National Capital Area ACA Intergroup and served as its first chair. She has now moved to Illinois in 2018, so she's now active in program there. Erin D. is celebrating 26 years of active ACA recovery this year. She holds several service positions at our World Service Organization, including serving on the Board of Trustees. So welcome to Aaron. And Josh, who is in the DC area, currently serves as secretary of the newly certified Northeast region of ACA. He holds several service positions at WSO, including addressing predatory behavior and meetings and service safety. And my guess is we're probably going to hear a little bit more about that today. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the panelists and welcome everybody to enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. My name is Karen. I'm an adult child. And before I start the introduction to today's workshop, I need to share my screen. In the meanwhile, do Aaron and Josh want to say something just sort of in terms of introductions or opening for a couple of minutes while I'm getting this set up?
Okay, Josh, here you go.
Go ahead, Aaron. Or?
Gosh, yeah, I was gonna let you go, Josh, but
okay, I can go.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I'm Josh. I would say that the journey along the path of getting to this point, in terms of this conversation around safety in meetings, around meetings, addressing predatory behavior, has been a years-long process. And some things, some of the historical aspects of this, a lot of the seed of what became this effort started in the DC area where I am now and where Karen was at that time. And we were both involved in our intergroup and shared the same home group. And we basically had some conversations and said, we think we have an issue. Maybe we should take it to intergroup. And we did. And we handled it at a local level in intergroup, and that's its own story. And then we sort of took it to the WSO level. I was there in Toronto, and I guess two ABCs ago, or three at this point. And that led to a conversation that basically went something like, in a group of, you know, 20 to 30 people presenting what we had gone through and saying, hey, does this affect anybody else? And like all the hands in the room went up. And we kind of at that point were like, okay, so it's not just us, right? And so maybe there's a bigger thing going on here. And I think that as this journey has continued, that's only been borne out as an assumption. And we're constantly trying to think of ways to help meetings and individuals help themselves through resources, through conversations, which leads us to today. So that's my intro.
Karen, are you ready? Do you want me to?
You just want to jump in for a minute and then I'll take over.
Sure, yeah. I'll kind of go back also to the beginning where when we first looked at this group and what we were calling it, addressing predatory behavior, there was a lot of talk at that ABC in, which one was that, Malmo or Toronto? Malmo. About that word and choosing to use that word, that it was a strong word and such. And so we really did put that out to the fellowship about the use of that word. And that's been an evolution. And about, you know, what this working group's tasks were, was not to come up with rules and regulations for the fellowship, but more to show the resources that are already there. And a lot of that is that the traditions do apply here, and some of our task is to show how the traditions apply here and how we can get comfortable speaking up and how our boundaries interfere and for me, fear of conflict. And the other thing, there were three, but the one sort of escapes me at the moment. Oh, how in our group often that we end up replaying our family roles and our family dysfunction through the denial. That was pretty apparent in a lot of the shares that we had in the special edition comm line. And you'll see that in the skits as well. So yeah, it's been a pleasure working with the group. Thank you.
Thank you both. Can everybody see my slide, my first slide on their screen right now?
I can.
Excellent. Yeah. Wonderful. So I just want to, again, my name is Karen. I'm an adult child. I've been privileged to be involved in this work on addressing predatory behavior, which is sort of more and more merging into a broader conversation about meeting safety for a few years now. And it's been a real privilege to be working especially with Aaron and with Josh on this topic, but also collaborating with the board. And I also want to thank the Connecticut Intergroup team for inviting us to present here and for actually giving us two sessions so that during the last session, we could focus more on just personal experience. And this time we want to take a slightly a different approach to the and I just sort of want to look at the whole series because I feel like all three of the workshops that we've been involved in, first as a participant and then as panelists, really sort of seem to focus around a very sort of interesting progression. The first workshop was about boundaries and really about the question of how we can use the 12 steps to learn how to implement stronger boundaries in our personal lives. And how can we apply the idea of boundaries to our personal recovery? Because so many of us, at least I can speak for myself, I did not grow up with any idea what boundaries meant, and personal boundaries were not acceptable for me in the family environment that I grew up in because other people's needs always prevailed over mine. And so just the idea that I had that I was empowered to set boundaries in my personal life has been a really important realization. So that was the topic of the first workshop. The second workshop was more about sort of our individual experiences of how boundaries or the lack of boundaries can play out in meetings. And then also the question of when a safety concern arises, to what extent is it the individual member's responsibility to set boundaries for themselves? And to what extent is it the meeting's responsibility to set boundaries for what is acceptable within the context of the meeting? And so sort of, I think in practice, we see a lot of different approaches to that. And that's also sort of borne out in the shares that we received for the special edition comm line on predatory behavior, where there's definitely some tension about, well, if you're having trouble setting boundaries with a fellow traveler, you really need to work on that. You need to work your own program on that. But on the other hand, well, to what extent is the meeting responsibility for, is the meeting responsible for having strong boundaries, letting members know what the boundaries of the meeting are, what's appropriate behavior in the context of the meeting? And then the next step in this progression of these three workshops is really taking a closer look at what the resources are that we already have available in ACA literature that can help us create a safe framework for personal recovery. And that's really what we want to focus on today. So that's why we're talking about ACA tools for healthy meetings. And really sort of at some point, the idea of partnerships and recovery was also part of what was thought about for this workshop. And I really want to link the two because I feel like personal tradition one states our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon unity. And that's really where the partnership in recovery starts. If we have healthy meetings, if we have strong meetings, our individual recovery will be better off and better served than if our meetings are struggling in that area. And so the three basic tools that we want to introduce today, and this slide is showing them both with a page reference in the Big Red Book and with a link if you want to follow along on the internet. The ACA 12 traditions, I think they're fairly well known. I'm aware of a number of groups that read the tradition of the month in their meeting at the beginning. Then we have the suggested commitment to service, again, with Big Red Book reference and a link to where you can find it on the internet. And then the last one that I also just want to mention here, because when I look at what are the foundations for meeting safety that we can establish in these resources, I also go to the 12 concepts. And so I don't want to focus on what are the 12 traditions verbatim, what is the commitment to service verbatim, what are the 12 concepts for service verbatim. We could go and read them, but that would take a lot of time and it would probably discourage people more, because sometimes these tools seem a little bit dry and it's hard to understand how they interface with our personal recovery. So I just want to take a closer look at what the foundations are for meeting safety in these resources. And I'm actually going to start with the concepts here, because specifically concept 9 and concept 12 really have some important reference points for me. Concept 9 spells out that good service leaders at all levels are indispensable for our future functioning and safety. So the term safety is actually mentioned here. It's not explained what safety means exactly, and I think that's work that we need to do, just sort of to establish some kind of common ground of what does safety mean? Is it a personal experience? Is it a group experience? These kinds of things. What does it depend on? But what this concept does is it definitely links the idea of functioning and safety to the idea of good service leadership. And then we can go to the other tools to establish, like, what is good service leadership? And I also want to mention concept 12 here, which references the World Service Organization shall observe the spirit of the ACA 12 traditions in all its proceedings. And to me, the concepts, while they're often written from the perspective of the World Service Organization, they really apply to all levels of service. So at any level of service, I'm reminded here that my actions shall observe the spirit of the ACA 12 traditions. And then specifically, that none of the conference members or none of the service members shall ever be placed in a position of unqualified authority over any of the others, and that all important decisions be reached by discussion, vote, and whenever possible by substantial unanimity. And so what I want to highlight here is the notion of unqualified authority. Tradition 2, we'll get to it later, talks about ultimate authority as opposed to the idea of qualified authority, limited authority that's specific to a certain task that a service leader is responsible for, but never any unqualified authority over the well-being of another member or of the group as a whole. And then it goes on also to say all important decisions be reached by discussion, vote, and substantial unanimity, which refers right there to the group conscience process. From here, taking a closer look at the traditions that I think have a special relevance in this context, tradition 1, I had referred to it earlier, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on ACA unity. So that, to me, indicates that our common welfare and our personal progress in recovery arise out of our unity as a group or as a fellowship. And tradition 2 goes on to state that for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as expressed in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. And while I understand that there's sort of differences of opinion in terms of referring to God or higher power, but to me, the main aspect of this tradition is that it introduces trust as a foundation for leadership, not top-down leadership, but actual mutual trust that, and so sort of unity arises out of mutual trust. Common welfare and personal progress and recovery arise out of trusting relationships among one another as fellow travelers. And so the question in terms of meeting safety is, how can we work together to establish that trust? And then the last thing I want to refer to here is how the suggested commitment to service also sort of bears out on that topic. And I've identified a few articles of the commitment to service that I feel have a bearing here, but I want to highlight the two that are highlighted here on this slide. And that's really about, I have to be committed to working my own recovery as a member of the program in order to avoid losing my own recovery and finding myself acting out on my old, spelled out here, taking care of others, controlling, rescuing, being a victim. And one of the things that we found in terms of our work on predatory behavior is that when unhealthy behavior takes hold in a meeting, people that are involved in this and potentially the entire meeting can get stuck on these old behaviors, the laundry list traits. And the goal is to work together using these tools in recovery to move beyond the laundry list trait, to grow out of the laundry list behaviors into the opposite behaviors that we consider healthier behaviors. And so what we want to do in this workshop today is just sort of offer a few examples of scenarios where old behaviors play out and have adverse consequences on what's going on in the meeting or what's going on sort of around the meeting. And so the way we want to go about this is to play some skits. These are recordings that were made at the 2019 AWC in Malmo. And so we want to play these recordings, share them with you, and then after each recording, or in the first case, after the first two recordings, we'll pause for Q&A so that we can have some immediate discussion about what you're observing about the skit we just played. And as you're listening to the recordings, we want to encourage you to consider which of the tools that we just referred to might apply to the scenario in question. And we ask you to type in your comments and questions and observations. And Christine will read those as they appear in the chat to the panelists so that we can respond. And then after that, we'll just do some more general overview and summary. And with that, I am going to proceed to the first skit. But before I do that, I just want to pause and give Aaron and Josh the opportunity to weigh in if there's anything I overlooked in this introduction.
Yeah, I can jump in. I would say that, Karen, you just laid out a whole bunch of things that are very important and may feel very abstract to some people. And the skits we're about to do, I think, will help understand what this looks like on the ground. So if anyone's feeling a little bit like this sounds very academic, it's about to get very real.
Good point. Thank you, Josh.
Yeah, I don't know that I would add too much, except that adding taking the proactive approach in each group, and by having tradition meetings is going to be really significant, that the group understands the tradition. So when it comes to scenarios that come up, that resource is there. And also what I find really helpful are the tradition meditations. So each tradition has a meditation that goes with it. And it's a good enough booklet that actually has those spelled out as well. So it's a really nice reference when you are in the situation and trying to educate the group as well. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you both. All right. I hope this works the way it's supposed to work. I'm going to hit play on skit one.
So Aaron and I will be doing the first skit. And this is supposed to be someone named Joan, who's had an issue coming to someone named Jim, who I will play, talking about an issue she encountered and bringing it to the group conscience and the resistance that might be faced in doing that. So,
and I'll be a little exaggerating with my body language for those of us that don't have English as a first language. Okay. Jim, I need to talk to you about Bob, the member who's been stalking me. His behavior is unacceptable. He asked me to go out for fellowship, and he made it seem like it was with a group of people, but it was only the two of us. He had reserved a private table in the corner just for us two. He later caught me off guard. He came up behind me with a hug, which I did not expect or invite or want. And it was more like groping me than a hug. And this has happened more than once. In meetings, he frequently sits across from me, winks, smiles, and then follows me when I go to my car. I always make sure to walk out with someone else, another woman, to be able to avoid him. Sometimes before I even leave the building, he stands at the doorway and tries to block me from leaving to tell me how nice I look. Well, I heard that the ACA Fellowship has come up with some ways that meetings can deal with stuff like this and decide when to confront a person who's acting in a predatory way.
Stuff like this has never happened in our meeting before. This has always been a safe group. Joan, it sounds like you need to learn to be more assertive. If you can't tell this guy that he's bothering you, maybe you'd be better off going to a women's only meeting and work in becoming more empowered and getting better at setting boundaries. Can't you just ignore him?
I spoke with him. I'm doing my best to set boundaries with him. I also talked to my sponsor about this, and we agreed. It's not healthy for the group to ignore the elephant in the room like this. This is not just about me. The group needs to talk about stuff like this when someone in the group is crossing other people's boundaries repeatedly. I have also heard from other women that he's acting in similar ways with them, and they feel uncomfortable as well.
Well, nothing this guy is doing is written about in our traditions. Stalking and sexual assault don't break traditions or concepts. It's not up to the group to try to control his behavior or make a safe space. Talk to other women who can help you see why this is happening to you. Like I said before, you really should go to a women's only meeting until you're more comfortable setting boundaries. And now, when you're at this meeting, maybe you just should sit with the women. When things like this happen, we have to look at how we ourselves are attracting these people into our lives.
Okay, this is frustrating. You are missing the point. I haven't done anything to encourage him.
What do you expect us to do? We can't put him on a sexual predators list. Take this to intergroup. Maybe they can help you.
It isn't intergroup's business to get involved in a meeting's issues. That's what a group conscience is supposed to be about. I would like to bring this to the group's business meeting.
Oh, we don't have business meetings unless we really need one. We've never had a problem like this, and I just don't see what we could do for you. The only other advice I have for you is that you need to do whatever you feel is right for your own safety.
So I'm going to go talk to my sponsor here. Joan. I'm Joan, sorry. This is Mary Jo. Mary Jo, I talked to one of the guys in my meeting that's been there for a long time, and I'm having a really hard time accepting what he said. I feel like I've been re-traumatized. I'm shaking, I'm sweating. I just can't go back to that meeting. He tried to tell me that it was all my fault. This is just like the denial that happened in my family of origin. He seemed really uncomfortable about this, and it seemed like he just didn't want to deal with the situation. And if no one deals with it, then Bob will just keep doing this to other people. As adult children, too many of us can be easily abused when we haven't learned to set boundaries or trust our gut feelings yet. And for the group to not protect its members, that sets a dangerous precedent.
I am in full support of whatever you decide to do, Joan, because you are on the right track. Are you available for a hug?
Definitely.
Okay.
Do we want to take a moment on this before we go on to take two of the same situation?
I'm remembering that it was fun. yeah, this is Erin. So just bringing up a couple things that happened in that first skit, you know, was the denial. It was, you know, back to the family of origin. Let's just, you know, this isn't really a problem. Blame the victim. And then, you know, the person, Joan, who was speaking out and yet feeling re-traumatized because here she was, she had talked to her sponsor about it, which is certainly a way to go first, you know, talk to somebody, reason it out and, you know, and then go to your group because you don't know if something like this is going to, or you may not know if something like this is going to come back at you. And looking at all the traditions that apply to this scenario, I'm thinking, you know, tradition one, tradition nine. I think we'll go into that a little bit more. So,
okay. Shall we play the second take?
Okay.
I need to talk to you about Bob, the guy who's been stalking me. His behavior is unacceptable. He asked me to go out for fellowship, made it seem like it was with a group, but it was only the two of us, and he had reserved a table for two in a private corner. He later caught me off guard, came up behind me with a big hug, which I did not expect, invite, or want, and it was more like a groping me than a hug. This has happened more than once. In meetings, he frequently sits across from me, winks, smiles, follows me when I go to my car. I always make sure to walk out with another woman to avoid him. Sometimes before I even leave the building, he stands at the doorway, tries to block me from leaving to tell me how nice I look. I heard that ACA Fellowship has come up with ways that meetings can deal with stuff like this and decide when to confront a person who's acting in a predatory manner.
Wow. Have you talked with Bob about this?
I spoke with him, and I'm doing my best to set boundaries with him. I also talked to my sponsor about this, and we agree it's not healthy for the group to ignore the elephant in the room like this. This is not just about me. The group needs to talk about stuff like this when someone in the group is crossing other people's boundaries repeatedly. I have also heard from other women that he's acting in similar ways with them, and they feel uncomfortable as well.
Okay. Well, I can think of a few options. We could call a business meeting and/or have two or three male members pull Bob aside and speak with them. Which would you prefer?
Okay. either call a business meeting or have two or three male members talk to him. Can we do both? Have some guys talk to him and bring it to the group conscience?
Absolutely. In the group conscience, would you like to name Bob specifically?
Let me think about this. Well, on one hand, I think that if the guys talk to Bob and he changes his behavior, which I'm not sure is going to happen given how exaggerated his behavior is, but if they talk to him and the behavior changes, then in that case, I think it's okay. I don't need to name him. However, if they talk to him and he just goes to another meeting and does the same thing, then maybe I should name him. What do you think?
There is not one right answer to these things. It's what you feel comfortable with. I will support you in either one of those ways, but I just want to reiterate, if you want to name him, that is not breaking his anonymity. Just we suggest you do that in the business meeting rather than in the meeting itself.
That's a good point, bringing it to the business meeting, because I wouldn't want to put it out to the whole group during a meeting and have people gossiping about it. Let's give him a chance.
Okay, well, I'll talk to two or three guys. We'll get something on. We'll call a business meeting. We'll set this topic as the topic for the business meeting. We'll see what happens with the two or three guys. And at that point in time when we have the business meeting, you can decide whether or not you would like to name him.
That sounds good.
Great.
Let's get back to each other on this.
Sounds good. The end.
Okay, so here we heard two different approaches to the same situation. And the next thing we want to do after playing these skits, these different approaches, is we want to open it up to some questions and comments from the audience. So if you have any questions or observations that you would like to share, you can type them in the chat now, and Christine will bring those questions and comments to the panelists.
So while we're waiting for those, I mentioned the traditions earlier. Let me read, tradition 9, which is, you know, one of the, in my opinion, about three traditions that overlap in here. ACA as such ought never be organized. We may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. And you heard, I forget what your name was in the skit, Josh, but you heard him asking Joan, how did she want to approach it? And I think there's a couple important things about that. And he did put it in her hands. It was clear to me that he was going to support her. I mean, I felt that if I were her, I was going to be supported by this person. At the same time, the person who has been violated, it is important that that person's going to take an active role, because I've seen scenarios where someone speaks up for that person who's been violated, and the person who's been violated backs out. And so, you know, here's this other person in the group holding the bag, and that obviously that's not going to be a healthy scenario. The meditation 9, higher power may we remember that ACA and its meeting and service structure are different than our families of origin. May we be patient and avoid reaching for the easiest way out when we are confronted with a difficult situation. And you kind of saw that in the first skit, help our ACA group ask for help in keeping our meetings safe and recovery oriented. Help us also celebrate the things that we do right. I mean, I certainly felt for Joan in that, you know, she could go back to her sponsor and feel good about what just happened there. Let's see if we have any questions.
Okay. So your first question is, why doesn't naming Bob break his anonymity?
Oh, I love this one. Can I jump in on this?
Go ahead.
All right. So this is like, we discussed this a lot when we were dealing with this in the DC intergroup. And we kind of came to the conclusion that, and you know, this is people at WSO, I think, are on board with this as well. So this is not just us in a bubble or something. But that's kind of a misunderstanding of what's meant by anonymity. Anonymity is really about, you know, your identity as an adult child. Like, you don't out somebody as an adult child in the outside world. Same way, like in AA, you wouldn't be like, oh yeah, my friend Bob the alcoholic. That would be breaking somebody's anonymity. But that does not mean that you're not allowed to say something that somebody does, particularly if it violates the safety of the meeting. Those are two very different things. And basically, the tradition of anonymity is not, as we put it, a shield from surfacing bad behavior.
Thank you, Josh. Also, one person said, can reading the 13th step in meetings be made mandatory?
Well, each meeting is autonomous. So, and I, you know, each meeting is autonomous. Reading the 13th is approved literature on that. So that's another question of, you know, what does the meeting decide on that? But also that, when we talk about predatory behavior, my understanding of the 13th step is that it's more about relationships and going after people that way. But predatory behavior, as we took it on, encompasses more than just, you know, a sexual or romantic relationship being there. So I think that's a, you know, question for the group.
Erin, you might want to explain to some folks what the 13th step is.
Okay, so try to remember what it. Well, the 13th step is when, my recollection of the 13th step is when someone is going after somebody else in their meeting, in the program, in a sexual or romantic way, and therefore, you know, obviously it's not about your own recovery. You're focusing on somebody else, and it's kind of an avoidance of your recovery. I don't know if somebody can give a better definition than that.
I can jump in here. There's a brief section on 13th stepping called Newcomers and 13th Stepping on page 571 in the Big Red Book. That I think it's the only place in the Big Red Book that refers to this idea of 13th stepping, which I believe was adopted from AA. Do you just want me to go ahead and read it?
Sure.
Okay. Newcomers can be particularly vulnerable to emotional, financial, and sexual abuses. Some people attending ACA meetings have not grown beyond their victim or victimizer scripts and may attempt to meet their own needs through manipulation of newcomers. This is known as the 13th step in most 12-step programs. This violates the safety of the meeting and can drive away some newcomers. The love and respect we offer to newcomers is a reflection of the love and respect we are learning to offer ourselves. We learn to respect ourselves and to honor ACA when we avoid acting out with someone new. If we are struggling with this area of our lives, we are usually not applying the program, or we are not willing to face our internal pain. Perpetrator or manipulative behavior is almost always driven by our avoidance of facing past harm and neglect. If this is the case, we ask a higher power for the willingness to change. We ask a sponsor to help us work the program. So that's the section.
Karen. Go ahead.
I just wanted to comment really quickly. I'm getting a lot of questions. I'm the tech help. If you want to send questions to the panel, please send them to Christine. Thanks.
Yeah, some of the questions, unfortunately, are, as you know, the chat moves down and the questions move up and then disappear. I had a question from Sweden, and it asked about how many groups translate Tradition 3 in their meetings. And I'm going to actually ask that that person to rewrite that question, if you wouldn't mind, so I can get it right. So please, if you wouldn't mind doing that, that would be really helpful. Here's a very good question that I want to make sure we get on the table, which is from the standpoint of a newcomer, how do we present these kinds of situations without essentially scaring off the newcomer who is still just trying to show up for meetings and feel comfortable in the meeting room?
I can jump in and speak to that. That is one of the biggest concerns, I think, in terms of openly addressing these issues. And for me personally, I'll just say from my personal experience, just starting coming to meetings, mentioning things in the preamble of the meeting was very helpful just to introduce ideas to me, to introduce the idea of, for instance, what is crosstalk? Or a burning desire. I learned that through the meeting readings at the beginning. And one of the ideas that the APB working group had in terms of addressing this was to suggest to meetings to have like a safety statement, which for one thing identifies just the possibility that safety issues could arise, and also names the steps that can be taken within the meeting to address any safety concerns that arise. And that way, people might already be primed when they encounter some inappropriate advances to recognize, oh, this is not something that is proper. This is not something I should have to be dealing with. But that way it's just mentioned. It becomes a routine of the meeting and people can hear it without having like a lot of intense feelings around it being brought up in a group conscience meeting or something like that.
Thanks. So the question from Sweden had to do with, I'm just going to read it. As a member of ACA wanting to recover, you can go to any meeting, women only, LGBTQ, etc. In Sweden, as an ACA member, you can go to any meeting as a member of ACA. And then the word FEX, as a man to a woman's meeting. It is slowly starting to change. So I'm not exactly sure what the question is. It sounds like it has something to do with can you go to a meeting that is reserved for only one group of people if you're not in that group, but maybe not. So maybe we'll take that question to offline and see if we can get a good answer that way. One of the members has asked, is there a safety statement written?
There is a safety statement, or we call it the ACA Commitment to Addressing Predatory Behavior. This is a document that was developed by the working group and then received WSO preliminary board approval for publication, and it is available on the free literature page for download so that groups can download it, print it, and use it in their meetings either as a tent card or as something that is read at the beginning of the meeting. There is also on the APB repository page on the ACAWSO website a collection of different safety statements that had previously been adopted by different ACA groups.
So one member shared that that they had a man who offended people, wanted to high five people after they shared, stared at women, cross-talked, etc. So many attempts were made to talk to him. He would scoot out right after the meeting, not respond to email, text, or phone call. Ultimately, someone left a message and said that he needed professional help and was no longer welcome. It was hell, but it took forever. So this is someone, I guess, who's relating an experience of attempting to solve this problem without taking it to a business meeting. And maybe you want to comment on that.
So was it I guess I would have more questions, mm-hmm. actually, you know, which maybe these questions would help somebody who's having this scenario. But when one person, it sounds like one person emailed the violating person and made this request for them to stop coming. And it shouldn't be just one person's responsibility. Hopefully that was something that was discussed in the business meeting and that the group came together in unity to do that. But also if in the case that it was the only resource of sending an email or something like that, I would make sure that it was not just one person doing that, that it was copied, because you don't want that one person to end up being scapegoated or blamed for doing something, or if they did take it on themselves and do it. So really making sure that that's as best it can be a group decision, you know, to move forward with that.
Oh, and you know, someone asked earlier in the line, and I skipped over the question, what if Joan had not had a sponsor? Where else could she have taken her, her problem besides obviously to, I guess, the secretary of the business meeting, which is what she did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a fellow traveler, a trusted traveler, an older member that she feels, you know, a connection, that somebody that she's seen, you know, interact in a healthy way, honors the traditions, commitment to service. It's scary. The question came up in that skit about taking it to intergroup. If she felt that there wasn't anybody safe there, I don't know. Would intergroup be a place to take it to at least have the discussion on how to proceed?
Yeah, this is Christine. I'll just say, on behalf of Connecticut Intergroup, that we do from time to time get questions from meetings where there's a member that's creating some sort of problem. And the request for us is, you know, how can we solve this? How can you give us some help? And we do have seasoned members who are willing to volunteer to come to a business meeting and sit in. So, you know, we don't say we can solve your problem, but we're happy to kind of be with you in a business meeting as you work your way through this.
And this is Karen, just to share from one of my meetings. We have a safety statement that's read at the beginning of the meeting and that identifies trusted servants that would be willing to take any concerns if something occurs and needs to be addressed.
For folks who are not looking at the chat, the links to the statements that have been referred to, the APB temp card, et cetera, are in chat. So if you want to take a look at that, you can write that down.
Christine, how are we doing with questions? Would now be a good time to maybe proceed and play another skit and then come back to some of these questions later on? Or how
do you? Okay, let's do it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Here is skit three.
Okay. Hi, Anne. I met you last week and I'm really glad you came back. The program is so healing. We learn how important it is to help each other by sharing our stories and what worked for us. Did you put your number on the phone list?
No, I just put my email down last week. This is all very new to me. I'm still feeling it out.
I understand. This is really a safe place. One of the things we learn is to become less isolated by opening up to others. Here's my number. Get your phone out. Come on. Here's my number. Let me have yours. What is yours?
Okay, here it is. Because I don't know how to say no.
By the way, thanks for that number. It's so helpful. I'm having a get-together this week where I show and sell recovery-oriented jewelry. Some of the other women from our group will be there, and here's my address. This would be a great chance to get to know some of us and get some things that will really help your recovery. You wear your jewelry and people will see it and know you're in recovery.
A week passes and the newcomer didn't go to Jane's get-together.
Okay. We didn't see you at the party this past weekend. I'm having another one next week. I have them every other week. Come by. It will be nice to get to know you. Don't shortchange your recovery.
Thanks, Jane. But I have a lot of expenses right now. Maybe some other time.
Oh, okay. I was listening to your share, and I think I could be a good sponsor for you. It is strongly suggested that you work the program with someone further along. It's part of my recovery to help others. Why don't we meet up this week?
Thanks, Jane. This is a lot to take in, and it feels a little overwhelming. And I'm thinking, why did I pick up the phone? I really relate to the laundry list. I'm just taking my time.
Well, many newcomers feel that way, Anne, but really, I can help. I'll see you at the next meeting.
At the next meeting, Jane approaches Anne.
Hi, Anne.
Oh, that's a beautiful necklace you're wearing.
Oh, I'm glad you like it. This is one of the pieces I sell. I can show you some of the jewelry. I have a brochure in my purse. Can we get together one day this week?
Oh, no.
I'm Jane. Mm-hmm. Okay. Hi, Anne. I met you last week, and I'm really glad you came back. Program is so healing. We learn how important it is to help each other by sharing our stories and what worked for us. Did you put your number on the phone list?
No, I just put my email down last week. This is all very new to me, and I'm just still feeling it out.
I understand, but this really is a safe place. One of the things we learn is to become less isolated by opening up to others. Here's my number. What is yours?
Excuse me. I did this backwards, actually. This here, you take this, I'll take this. I blame myself. So I'm an old timer and I'm interjecting. Excuse me. Hey there, Anne. Let's go over here. Hey, are you okay? I could be mistaken, but I'm getting the sense that you're uncomfortable.
I do feel weird. Jane keeps approaching me, trying to get me to buy her stuff and be her sponsee. It feels icky.
Yeah, that's not just you. You're not the only one. I think it's time to take this to the group conscience.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you saying something, because I just didn't know what to do, and I don't know how to say no.
I thought I sensed something going on there, and I figured I'd interrupt that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay.
So again, we had two variations of the same situation, and we're open to comments and questions.
This is Erin. I want to really bring us back to Karen, which was the commitment to service, and number 8, being willing to surrender the position in which I serve in the interest of unity and to provide the opportunity for others to serve, to avoid problems of money, property, and prestige, and to avoid losing my own recovery through the use of service to act out my old behavior, especially in taking care of others, controlling, rescuing, being a victim, etc. And it's also why I think, you know, when we're being proactive about scenarios like this, reading the commitment to service from time to time in one of our preambles or somewhere is really that reminder of when things are being derailed, things are going, you know, the way they're not supposed to. And then also tradition five, for our group purposes, there is but one primary purpose, and it's not selling jewelry.
So you've got a question, where does not rescuing come in to this conversation?
Role of the bystander? Josh, did you want to?
Sure. I think that the interjection that was, you know, that happened in that second version was about somebody saying, you know, are you okay? Not necessarily trying to make it be different, but just checking in with someone. So that would be my assessment.
Well, maybe the question had to do more with the first person saying, you know, I want to be your sponsor and give me your phone number and all of that. Well,
so one comment I would make is one of the things this skit was supposed to exemplify, you know, most of the time when we think about predatory behavior, we think about romantic and sexual things. But there's plenty of situations like, you know, was referenced earlier, where it takes an emotional form or a psychological form or a financial form. And this skit was meant to sort of exemplify how some of those other things might play out. And in particular, aside from the jewelry thing, which is clearly a financial thing, the thing of like, oh, let me be your sponsor. I think, you know, we've observed in our discussions, we've talked about how we've observed individually and collectively that sometimes people, it's kind of like there's like a power trip thing that happens. And so sometimes people like collect sponsees in a way where they like push their sponsorship on others. And so in this particular case, at least the way I read that skit, it was not so much about rescuing, so much as like collecting another sponsee. So that's just my opinion.
Or was the question whether or not the man in the skit was rescuing the newcomer, which for me, I like when Josh said, just walking and saying, hey, are you okay here? Was not necessarily rescuing, but supporting the fact that this is a newcomer, probably doesn't have any sense of, you know, is this even okay to be happening in a meeting, or being able to set boundaries, as you saw, I think it was Jones that was really struggling with that, you know, but that when we see this as a group, when we see this happening in our meeting, wait, there is only one primary purpose here. This is about group unity and personal recovery. And this is, again, being comfortable to speak up and keep the meeting a safe place. And so, you know, the man didn't go up there and you know, confront or really go at the person that was being too pushy, you know, but just kind of went up and say, hey, is it okay here? You know, so I think that, you know, it's finding the right line of service coming from love, to be supportive of the newcomer, because, you know, I mean, how many people as newcomers would we have come back if that person was going to keep doing that?
Thanks, Aaron. So someone has said, I think it's important to share in the body of the meeting my experience, my feelings, and maybe frustrations around boundary violations, avoiding names, but expressing my concerns. I don't understand why you would push it to a business meeting.
So can you say, can you repeat that for us again though?
Sure. This person is saying essentially, I think it's important to share whatever issue is going on in the body of the meeting rather than sending it to the business meeting. I don't understand why, why I as a member shouldn't be expressing my concerns in the actual ACA meeting.
I can start with that one. So when you have a scenario like that and you are referencing the traditions, you know, to make it a healthy meeting, there is going to be kind of crosstalk or at least referencing the same subject. So, you know, being able to have healthy conversations about this type of thing. That being said, I've also heard it in a personal share, you know, obviously not with crosstalk, but with feeling uncomfortable in a meeting. Like if I was at a meeting and I was going to say, you know, I've been coming to this meeting and I've been feeling really uncomfortable with approaches of people before or after the meeting. And I think that that's perfectly appropriate, but you're not really going to get necessarily support or feedback or solutions by saying it in the meeting. Whereas when it's taken to a business meeting, you know, the group gets to come together as a whole and respond. Because it is the safety of the group and the group coming together in unity to, you know, not allow what goes against the traditions.
And to just jump in, I think, the question we were addressing earlier about is it okay to name an individual or not? If I'm sharing my experience with a challenging situation at a meeting, I would absolutely be sharing it anonymously without identifying persons, without starting a crosstalk conversation in the middle of the meeting. And a business meeting could provide more framework for that kind of back and forth conversation about the situation, and also determination of it would be more appropriate if so decided to share the name of the person who's doing the behavior in the business meeting discussion than it would be in the actual meeting.
Question, who can attend business meetings?
Everybody.
It should be open to everybody. If you're hearing something different than that, that's a sign that something's off.
You know, in our panel last week, one of our panelists was discussing with me the issue of a home group and whether one can or should go to a business meeting in a meeting that is not designated their home group. And I'd just be interested in what you panelists think about that issue.
I've heard this issue come up, not so much in ACA, but in other 12-step groups. There's no like rule other than like what a group decides for itself. I know that many groups I go to kind of take the position that like you can come to the business meeting, but if you want a vote at the business meeting, you should be a quote home group member. And that sort of entails that only one person can only have one home group. So you can't vote multiple places. Not every group works like that. So it's kind of up to that particular meeting how they want to run their business meeting.
And I think that's also a question that's coming up maybe more right now because so many meetings are opening up to a wider audience over Zoom. And in my mind, for me personally, specifically, I've rejoined my old home group meeting in DC from Illinois over Zoom. And I have some credit for me to vote on when it comes to business meetings of the group. I don't feel any restrictions from attending a business meeting, but if it's a question about meeting in person, that's not necessarily something I would even vote on in terms of the meeting discussion. And so these are things I think that we just have to also sort of hash out under the different circumstances that we're operating under right now.
The other thing to consider is, you know, the safety of the group. And you can get a really hot topic where people will go and get all their friends to come to the business meeting so that they can sway a vote in a certain direction. And so that is another reason why, you know, the group wants to have some boundaries around that, you know, in case something like that's going to happen.
So here's a slightly different topic. We have called a group conscience in my home meeting due to a male member appearing shirtless in a Zoom meeting. Do you have any input on eating, smoking, vaping, and a man being shirtless in this new world of Zoom meetings?
Such a great question. Oh my God. Can I jump in?
Sure.
Okay. This is my opinion on this is take it to the business meeting. It's up to the group to decide whether or not that's appropriate. Now, of course, if something like they're Zoom bombing or something like that, you know, the person who's doing the moderation or the, like what Brad is doing today, like can handle, you know, super egregious, whatever things that need to just be taken care of in the moment. But I mean, something happened in my business meeting, or my home group the other week, which I thought was interesting, where it's a meeting in the morning, and as you saw me, I was like eating something, and somebody in that meeting felt strongly about people eating in that meeting and raised something in the meeting about, why are we having people eating in the meeting? Someone shut that down. And the secretary's response was, bring it to the business meeting.
I'll bring up a situation. I won't name the person who is our WSO board chair who was in a Zoom meeting. You must know this story, Christine. Know the story? So there was a Zoom meeting with some other board members, and he apparently didn't realize that his camera was still on, and he got up, took his shirt on, off, put some deodorant on, and came back.
Ooh, ouch.
I'm sure you don't know his name. Nobody will tell him I told us that story, but he tells that story himself, but it was pretty funny. So yeah, something we want to be conscious of at least.
The lovely world of Zoom.
Yeah.
So getting back to our, you know, our panel last week, I know that there are a lot of people that think that business meetings are boring and they don't go to business meetings. And I'm hoping that one of the things people are taking away from this panel is that it is the proper place for resolving so many issues and teaching us how to respectfully disagree and have conversations, which we did not learn how to do as children. It's a very important place. And I'm hoping that you're all standing for that proposition.
That's almost a perfect segue to the last skit that we have to play here today, which is a scenario playing out at a business meeting. Are we ready to play that and then take some more questions about that topic?
Yeah.
Okay. Off we go.
I'd like to open this business meeting. Thanks. I'd like to open this business meeting. Thanks to all who have chosen to attend. I've received these materials from Intergroup, and I think we should discuss. It talks about possibly the possibility of predatory behavior occurring in ACA meetings. Has anyone here experienced such behavior?
I know this is a really important topic, but unfortunately, I have to leave for another commitment. Diana, are you sure you're comfortable staying, or do you want to leave with me?
Have you experienced or observed it in this group?
I saw the letter written by Susie about me. I just want to clarify that I never realized Susie felt this way about me and my behavior toward her. I wish she had spoken to me about how she feels, and I'm sure we could have worked this out directly in person.
I didn't write this letter to accuse a particular person, and I referred to the person who approached me as X to protect anonymity. I shared my experience on this topic because I feel it's something we need to discuss as a group, just like we're doing now in this meeting.
I want to explain that I asked for us to meet because I saw some questionable behavior happening after the meeting a couple of weeks ago. Does anyone want to discuss what happened at that time?
Again, I need to say that I feel I am being treated unfairly. I thought Susie and I were friends. I had no clue she felt this way about me. I might have noticed that she stopped talking to me at some point, but I had no idea why she did this. I've been sad about it, but I don't know this was why she stopped talking to me. Susie, you really should have spoken to me about how you feel.
Okay, Joe. You have just now outed yourself, identified yourself as the person I was talking about in my letter. I just want to say that there's nothing in the letter that would identify you specifically. And actually, I don't believe our conflict could have been resolved between the two of us. In fact, when I did try to set boundaries with you, you got aggressive, tried to pressure me for hugs, and even cornered me inside a meeting room by blocking the door. I felt extremely unsafe around you and didn't bring this up for the longest time because I wasn't sure what it would do for the safety of this meeting and others that I go to. I maintained my safety by avoiding meetings you attend. But now, I don't think that's enough. I think we need to work together as a group to ensure everyone feels safe, especially the newcomer.
I can see that most of the business meeting members have left. Susie, thank you for bringing up this very important topic. I suggest that we periodically revisit the topic at subsequent business meetings to see where we are with it as a group when we have more participation. If there are no objections, I move to adjourn this meeting.
Comments?
So I'll start you off with one question, which is actually a holdover, but it relates in some ways. So far, this person says you have discussed a man hitting on a woman, but would you consider doing a skit where there's a woman hitting on a man?
Absolutely. I think the skits, if they're talking about men hitting on women, are not reflective of the full reality of the situation. We heard stories sort of in the work of the APB working group that were not just men hitting on women, but women hitting on men. And our objective is really actually to make it clear that this goes beyond the romantic sexual dimension. It includes sort of more the financial, more the emotional dimension. And it is not exclusively men who act in these inappropriate ways. It is also oftentimes women, including in the romantic sexual dimension.
Thanks, Karen. Someone else wants to know how the decisions of the business meeting are shared with the entire group.
So
One way to do that is written up and left on a clipboard. Well, this was when there were in-person meetings, but the minutes are typed up and left there, even circulated around the room at the next meeting.
So in my business meeting, the secretary, when we have announcements in our meeting, the secretary announces decisions that have been made at the prior business meeting.
I think another thing maybe while we're waiting is that when we presented this in Malmo, we were really fortunate that a lot of people spoke up and spoke to times in their recovery where they were acting as the predator and, you know, that appreciating seeing themselves in the skit, but talking about being approached and how to be approached. And what struck me was one of the people spoke to how would you deal with it if it was, for example, a meeting of some substance abuse, like say it was drinking and the person was drinking again. You know, that's approaching the behavior, not so much necessarily going after the person, but approaching the behavior. And that, okay, so this is a behavior that needs to be addressed, and let's address this behavior just as you would address if it was an alcoholic that was drinking again.
Someone wants to know if the chair of the business meeting isn't behaving in a somewhat predatory way by expecting the victim of unwanted attention to out themselves. Isn't this a demonstration of a lack of good leadership?
The chairperson of the business meeting is expecting the person being violated to out themselves?
That's what the question says.
Yeah. Maybe that speaks to what I talked about earlier, that the person has to be willing to speak for themselves. If I was a chairperson and I was going to say, hey, Susie, you know, are you going to bring that up? I need to look at my behavior there. So I don't see that as a appropriate thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, and that kind of comes to where we look at the how we're moving into the ad hoc meetings and service safety committee. You know, looking at our own recovery and our tools, our resources of how to learn to speak up. And, you know, if I look at, you know, my own inventory, my fourth step, it's like, you know, and if I'm not speaking up, how might I be hurting myself? How might I be carrying on an old dynamic? And when is it the right thing to do, not only for myself or for the group, but, you know, there is the whole going back to personal recovery and how healthy am I, how healthy and how safe do I feel that the group can support me in this? I certainly wouldn't want to be outed by the chairperson, but I also have to look at, is there anything I did that had the chairperson saying that? Did I lead the chairperson to expect that I was going to do something and then I left them with the bag? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Can your panelists speak to a person's options if they end up attending a dysfunctional group conscience where a person does not feel heard or acknowledged?
That's a conversation sort of in the context of a PB working group. That's a conversation I've had with quite a few members, and also something I've encountered myself where issues arose within meetings that I was participating in, and the group conscience did not come down where I needed it to come down. Like, the group conscience agreed on things that weren't okay for me. And that can happen in these scenarios. That can absolutely happen. We are not infallible as a group. We can make mistakes as a group and then hopefully learn from our mistakes as a group. As an individual, when that happens, I do have to remember that I am not trapped in the dysfunctional family where I had no other options. I have options in ACA. I don't have to keep coming back to a meeting where the group conscience isn't aligned with my own personal needs and my own recovery and where I get triggered at the meeting. I can go find another meeting. I have the resources available to start another meeting if the only meeting in town is not working for me. And right now there's so many other resources through online meetings that I think that becomes more and more of a personal choice. And if I'm, and then again, it sort of comes back to personal recovery. If I'm staying in a situation that's not working for me, that's something I really have to take a look at myself. And if I've done all the steps, if I've brought it up with a trusted friend, if I've brought it up to the group conscience meeting and to the group conscience, to the business meeting, and the outcome isn't aligned with my own personal needs, then I have to just realize that I have choices.
This relates to a question that was actually asked earlier, which is, what happens when a group appears to be enabling a perpetrator by deciding that compassion is required rather than calling them out on their behavior?
I think if that behavior is being enabled, clearly for me, if that's going to continue despite something being taken to a business meeting and it sounds like a minority opinion, if people were voting against that, we need to leave this person, he's allowed to do that, or she, you know, she's an old timer, she knows what she's doing, that kind of thing, and not dealing with it. That's where I would want to know that business meeting can have a healthy minority opinion where people are going to listen to that minority opinion and maybe, you know, see a different picture possibly. And if not, that would be a meeting that I would choose not to be at.
Yeah, I would jump in and say, this I think goes back to what Karen was saying with the last question, which is like, if it doesn't work, you know, I've certainly made that decision, just be like, this meeting doesn't work for me anymore, you know, and don't forget that you have that right. And in some ways, that responsibility, I would argue, you know, which is like the ACA serenity prayer. Like, I may think that this meeting ought to do it the way I think it should, but if it doesn't, then, you know, maybe it's me who needs to do something different.
Thanks, Jess. I'm going to read this question. This question has been repeated two or three times. I thought I read it before, but let me read it again. In a new group and a business meeting is called, how do we present unsafe situations where we are still learning how to show up for meetings, let alone run a business meeting?
That might be a scenario to look for, if not a local intergroup, if there isn't one locally. To look to the region, if there's a region there, maybe there's not. But I think somebody talked about it earlier. I think it might've been you, Josh, where you talked about inviting someone from intergroup to come into the business meeting, not to give rules or say how it's supposed to go, but to kind of coach, you know, how a business meeting works.
So we have a comment from one person who feels that if in a business meeting, I'm going to have to do some preamble to make this question from asking, who here is a victim of sexual assault? That is not the way to talk about such a sensitive topic. I would grieve it if my employer ever did that. So the it, I think, is how is it to it discussing a member's grievance about unwanted attention different from asking who here is a victim of sexual assault?
I'm having trouble wrapping my mind around the question.
Okay.
I don't know if anyone else is.
They sound very, very different to me. I mean, one thing I would say is what I hear in that question is sort of maybe what's, maybe it's, I could chalk it up to some sort of miscommunication or something. Like bringing these issues up to a business meeting, there's no putting anyone, like trying to like put people on the spot to speak up if they've been affected. You may say like, has somebody been affected, you know? And so there's like an opening to raise your hand if you feel like you haven't, but there's, I'm the thing that seems like the in the second scenario, it sounds like somebody's being put on the spot. And that's not what I have in mind at all about how this would be handled in a business meeting. Maybe that's the disconnect.
And I think the other thing is that you're talking about the principle, not the personalities. So if you wanted to bring it up in a group, in a business meeting to talk about, you know, how would we as a group want to deal with something like this that happened? And that it sounds like that's something that would be brought up in a proactive approach. If it's trying to be brought up as a manipulation to something that's going on that people aren't really talking about, I think that's a slippery slope.
So here's one last question. What percentage of the vote is required to determine when a group conscience is achieved?
I don't think there's one answer to that. But I think there's a lot of good guidance in the Big Red Book under substantial unanimity.
Yeah, we did actually. There was a whole PowerPoint in our last section where we attempted to kind of tease through those issues. So that might be a useful. And we have, I believe, posted that to our Connecticut CTACA website. A question has been asked. Will there be recordings? Is there a link that can be posted to the recordings of the previous two sessions? I believe if you go to ct-aca.org/media, you will find those recordings. And we will get this one up as soon as possible. So we're now past 3:30, and I know some of you do need to leave the meeting. So I think what we're going to do is close with the ACA version of the Serenity Prayer. And then if folks want to stay around afterwards in the meeting room, we can do that. How does that sound to everybody? Okay, so the ACA version of the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity. To accept
I'd like to open this business meeting.
Being treated unfairly.
the one I can. Courage.
And the wisdom.
Wisdom to know that one is me.
Thank you, everybody. That was adorable.
Sorry about that.